Good morning. This is Studies Through the Bible with Pastor Zach Ebarb. I am Pastor Zach, and after some major technological difficulties this morning, we will finally get into the next part of our study throughout the Bible as we're going through the overviews. Last week, we started the prophetic books, the books about the prophets, and we talked about Jeremiah and Lamentations. We've talked about the book of Isaiah. And now today we are going to be looking at Ezekiel and Daniel. Ezekiel is a very interesting book of the Bible. And what makes it so amazing, so different than many other books is not only the topics that we're going to cover throughout the book of Ezekiel, but also the fact that this book was written under Babylonian captivity. Ezekiel was in a foreign land during the time that he wrote this. So as we're getting into this book, obviously our author is Ezekiel, and we're going to talk about him a little bit here this morning. We know that Mr. Ezekiel, based on the opening three verses of the book, was the son of Buzi, as receiving the visions of God recorded in chapters 1 through 3 of the book, okay? So, we know that Ezekiel is the son of Buzi. We know that he is also a priest. In fact, he is called of God when he is 30 years old. And it is told to us, of course, that we know from Levitical law, that the age of 30 is when a priest would begin doing his job in the temple. Well, being under Babylonian captivity, Ezekiel, of course, would not have had the opportunity to serve in that way, and as a result, God uses him as a prophet. And so Ezekiel he's in this captivity, and he is very much, in a lot of ways, like Jeremiah. You know, he's a priest. He is called of God to be a prophet, and his, you know, at the age of 30, he is going to preach a lot of apocalyptic type messages. There's going to be a lot about the judgment of Judah, the judgment of the nations around the nation of Israel, but there's also going to be the element of the promised Messiah coming and future hope for the nation. But he kind of has a little bit of a rough life, just like Jeremiah. His wife dies as a sign to the exiled Jews that Jerusalem would not be spared. God takes Ezekiel's wife to show the people that they indeed they're not getting off the hook this time. There will not be a stall of punishment for them. And then not only that, but when we're going through this book, because Ezekiel is a priest, there's going to be a lot of priestly emphasis on all of the things that we're going to talk about with the temple, the priesthood, the sacrifices, the Shekinah glory of God. There's going to be many, many, many things that take the attitude, the emphasis approach of a priest in the discussions that are going to occur. That's why I tell everybody, it's so very, very important. Before you read any other part of the Old Testament, that you read the first five books of the Bible. You need to know Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy to understand the rest of what is going on in the Old Testament and the significance of many of the things that are going to occur. This is literally the history of the nation. And so Ezekiel, he is in Babylonian captivity. His name means God strengthens or strengthened by God, whichever one you prefer. And he is going to be a very, very strong prophet with a very, very strong message. And so, while obviously we know that Ezekiel is under the Babylonian captivity, so about the time all of this occurs is about 597 BC. Okay, that's about the time this book is written. We know, because Ezekiel was quite the record keeper, his book is actually one of the easiest in the Old Testament to date. And because of that, we know that his first vision happens around 593, 592 BC. And the last date we are given for any kind of prophecy is 571 to 70 BC. So he has a 20-year ministry until he's about 50 years old. Now, the book as we know it, okay, is more than likely completed. They believe started around 597, but not actually completed and put together until after 571 to 70 BC. We know that he was 30 years old. They tell us that in chapter 1, verse 1. And we know that he was a contemporary to Jeremiah and Daniel, more than likely knew both of these men and may have even worked closely with Daniel since they both would have been in Babylonian exile. In fact, Daniel is actually going to be talked about three times in the book of Ezekiel. So what's so amazing about these prophetic books, but also complicated, is like I told you last week, that a lot of these men are working and have ministries at the same time as other ones do. This isn't God sent a prophet, that one died, God sent a prophet, that one died. It's not that kind of system. God sent a prophet, well, God might have sent another prophet halfway through that guy's ministry, and then there may have been another. So there's this intertangling of what these men are doing, but the majority of the messages are the same. Some have a lot more messianic discussions than others, but the book of Daniel, Ezekiel, Jeremiah, all of these deal with eschatological situations of talking about how the end will come and how God will eventually restore the world, and then also the discussion of the coming Christ, the Messiah to be, the one who would die for the sins of the world. So there's a whole lot of very, 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 very strong similarities between the majority of these books of the prophets, and a lot of that is because they were working at the same time and dealing with a lot of the same people. So let's talk about how we're going to break Ezekiel down, all right? So first of all, chapters 1 through 3, we have the call and commission of Ezekiel. That's where we find out who his daddy is, that he's of the priestly line, that he's 30 years old, all that stuff I've talked about. That's in chapters 1 through 3. Then we have the judgment on Judah, chapters 4 through 24. If you remember, Jeremiah and the book of Lamentations and even Isaiah dealt with a lot of what? The judgment on Judah, okay? Then we have the judgment on the Gentiles, something else that we've seen in the last all of the last prophetic books that we've looked at. That's 25 through 32. And then, as all the others have, there is the restoration of Israel, chapters 33 through 48. So, like the book of Daniel and Revelation, Ezekiel mainly belongs in the apocalyptic writings, okay? Meaning the things that are going to happen. The reason for this is the way that this book is written. Something that a lot of people don't understand when they go and look at the book of Daniel and the book of Revelation is they do not know how to properly study the Word of God. And the first rule of thumb for that is that you interpret things literally until they do not make sense, okay? And the reason for that is because in these kinds of writings, guys, we have symbolism, visions, allegories, parables, symbolic actions. Not every single thing that is written in these types of literature is 110% a literal thing. And a majority of it hinges on cultural and historical references that are used to illustrate these occurrences. That's why the book of Revelation, in a lot of ways, it's a very important book, obviously, because God felt the need for you to know it. But it is a book that you as an individual, as a studier of the Bible, do not need to get enthralled in because there is so much about it that we do not know. Okay, with even the things in Ezekiel and Daniel, there's things that we will not know and we will never know. We'll be like Paul said, that are in this life, I see through a glass darkly, but when I die, when I'm in the presence of God, I will understand it all. And so, and then not only that, but because of a lot of the historical and cultural references and symbolism that they use, you have got to know the history and the culture of the people. Leviticus is probably a book of the Bible many pastors don't touch, many Christians don't read, because it is so thick and so difficult, and it's a lot for you to wrap your mind around. But that book is a keystone to interpreting many of the things that are seen in the book of Ezekiel and Daniel and Revelation and all of these books that Christians love to pick up and start reading because they want to sit and speculate about things they can never possibly know. And so what we're going to have here with Ezekiel when we go through it individually, which could be years from now at the rate we're going, I'm not sure exactly how long it'll take us to get to that book, but we need to understand that not only do we need to know the history of the people and the culture and all these references, but we also need to understand how to interpret these scriptures, how to know when symbolism starts, when visions start, and these allegories and parables and symbolic actions, to know when these things start, because Ezekiel uses many different avenues of expression to get his message across to the people. He uses some vastly creative illustrations to get these people to understand that judgment was coming. Judgment was going to be fulfilled, but that eventually there would be this restoration. Okay, so that's something to keep in mind as you're looking at these types of books, is knowing what category they fall in and how it is we need to go about interpreting them, and being honest with ourselves about whether or not our Bible knowledge is at a level we can comfortably look at it. Now, not saying that you can't pick these books up and read them and learn what they're talking about and to some degree understand what's going on. You can do that if you're willing to sit and to study and to dig through it. But I promise you, it'll be a whole lot easier for you to interpret and a whole lot easier for you to go through as a student of the Bible, as someone who is actually studying the Word and what God wants you to know, if you take the time to learn the basic things first. It's a lot easier to tread through the swamp if we got rubber boots on than to tread through the swamp in sandals, okay? And so, as we're going through this, we have all of these things that are going on in reference to Judah and the Gentiles and the judgment on these groups, but also the return of Israel and the restoration of the kingdom, okay? So not only do we have all of this going on, but as I told you, there are some Gentile nations that are judged as well. These are Ammon, Moab, Edom, Philistia, Tyre, Sidon. Another one that comes up that a lot of people, there's a lot of debate about is Magog and the King Gog. These guys more than likely are up near Turkey based off of some Greek literature and historical records that we know of. But so we have the judgment of Judah, the judgment on these nations. And we're not going to go a lot into them. One of them is Egypt as well. I'm sorry, I forgot about that. And actually, Ezekiel talks about the fact that Egypt, while it is will remain a nation, it will never return to the splendor of what it was way back when. And that still remains true today. Egypt has never become a world power again. In fact, they are very close to what I would say being a third world country. Now, that may be American arrogance coming out, but they haven't really aspired anymore since the judgment of God on their empire way back when the Jews were leaving and trying to go to Canaan, and Moses, of course, was saying, "Let my people go," right? And so since then, nothing has happened, and Ezekiel talks about the fact that it never will again become a power. But then we got all this judgment going on, right? We got all this very, very bad news. we turn to what would be even worse for the people to hear, which is the fall of Jerusalem. Okay? Ezekiel makes them understand this is going to happen, and it does happen in his lifetime. But he turns from all of this judgment to future restoration. We see the vision of the Valley of Dry Bones, which is talking about God bringing the nation back, reanimating them to life. We see the restoration of the fallen city and the temple, land. All of this is given to Ezekiel in great detail in chapters 40 through 48. There's even a very intricate description of the new outer court and the inner court and the temple, and that's in chapters 40 through 42. And then he also sees the return of the glory of the Lord to the temple from the east, and that's in chapter 43. So while all of this is going on, there is also hope. There's a restoration. There's a lot of messianic discussions. The Son of Man is used 99 times. Now, it's talking about Ezekiel, but we also know that Jesus Christ used that title a lot to talk about himself. And so there's a little bit, some people say that he may be regarded as a type of Christ, meaning kind of give you a using a regular man to illustrate a coming Messiah. I don't know if I would say that necessarily. I think maybe it would be more to help you understand that whatever prophecies are being discussed, when Jesus says, "I'm the Son of Man," those are in regards to him that occur in Ezekiel. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. The point is that all of these discussions happen after the Spirit of the Lord falls upon Ezekiel in chapter 11, verse 5. So, all of these things are going to be talked about. We're going to be talking about the restoration of the Davidic covenant and the Davidic Messiah and all of these things, even a little bit about the church. So, to give you an overview of Ezekiel, all right? Chapters 1 to chapter 2 is Ezekiel sees the glory, okay? He talks to God, all right? Chapter 2 to 4, Ezekiel is commissioned to the work. All of this happens before the siege, okay? Before the Babylonians take Ezekiel, all right? And all of the topic of what we're talking about right now is going to deal with Judah's fall. And this is before, actually occurs in Babylon. Ezekiel was taken with the first group. And then there will, of course, will be another group that is taken as well with Nebuchadnezzar. And there we'll talk about all that in great detail when we get there. Then chapters 4 to 25, signs, messages, visions, and parables of judgment. Okay, dealing with Judah, dealing with the Gentiles, all of these things that are going to come up. Then chapters 25 to 33, we have more judgment on the surrounding nations. This is written and spoke about during the final siege that Nebuchadnezzar leads against Jerusalem. This is a 586 BC, okay? And of course, Judah falls, and 33 to 40 is the return of Israel to the Lord. 40 to 48 is the restoration of Israel in the kingdom. This happens after the siege from 585 to 570 BC. And this is the message of hope, basically, for Judah and Israel, that they will be returned. But so, to kind of give you a couple of important details, we're going to talk about the temple and all that. If I could show you pictures on this, that'd be awesome. Then I would show you the pictures, and that would help give us a little bit more to talk about with Ezekiel. But because this book is so thick and there's so many things that go on, I don't want to go into too terribly much detail with you and get you confused, because it can get very confusing very quickly, especially without a visual representation, because there's quite the little tree of events that happens in the book of Ezekiel, and how he's around during the time of this king, and 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 this happens, and this happens, and this happens, and this happens, and this king comes in, and so it gets pretty thick very quick. But I do want to highlight very quickly something that I feel like is neglected too terribly much by pastors, and that is the parables of Ezekiel. Now, the reason that I want to highlight this with you, number one, all of them are very important. All of them deal either with messianic things or the judgment on the nation. A lot of them reveal different character traits, aspects about the nature of God, but also the fact that he taught these people using what? Parables. The same way Jesus Christ would come and teach the people using parables. I cannot stress to you the importance of reading and knowing and understanding the parables that are taught not only in the Old Testament but in the New Testament by Jesus Christ. They are illustrations that will stick in your mind very well, would have a very important divine purpose for them. And so, also, to add to that, this shows that the preaching and the teaching of the Word of God has always started with what? Teaching. Teaching is giving them the knowledge. Preaching is applying that knowledge. And you have to do both. You can't do one or the other. Jesus taught the parable. He preached the message. Okay? So it's very important that we understand that both need to occur for there to be a good understanding of the Word of God. So, first of all, the wood of the vine, Ezekiel 15, 1 through 8. This symbolized the way and how Judah had become useless to God and now served no other purpose than to be burned up in judgment. What do you think is the message of that one? There is a point you can reach with God where you are no longer able to be used, and God will remove that problem, okay? I firmly believe that if a pastor or a member or any child of God reaches a point where they are so consumed by the world, so caught up in what the world wants to do, that they can no longer be used of God, God's going to bring you home. I mean, that's just the reality of the situation. The next one is the foundling, Ezekiel 16. This illustrates the nation's betrayal of God's love and compassion, something that you and I probably do very, very often. The third one is the eagles and the cedar. This illustrates the foolishness of King Zedekiah, whose rebellion would bring Nebuchadnezzar's troops to destroy Jerusalem. As you remember, King Zedekiah does quite a few foolish things during his kingship. He's better than most kings, but he does do some very dumb things. The fourth one is the fiery furnace. This explained the way in which God was going to purify his people through the heat of the siege of Jerusalem. Or in other terms, the way God picks sin and problems from your life and my life by using trials to make us better than what we were before. Another one that happens is the two harlots. That's Ezekiel 23. That symbolized the spiritual adultery of Israel and Judah. I'm sure that we could fall into that category from time to time as well. The sixth one is the cooking pot. That's Ezekiel 24, 1 through 14. That symbolized the way in which God was going to turn up the heat on Jerusalem in order to cleanse it of its impurities. Basically the same idea as the fiery furnace. Number seven, Ezekiel 27, is the shipwreck. That illustrated the judgment that was going to fall on Tyre. And number eight was the irresponsible shepherds. Oh boy, Ezekiel 34, that signified the worthless leaders of Jerusalem and how God would deal with them. Pastors, if you don't do your job, if you're more worried about the social nonsense or visiting a hospital and all that, and you neglect to focus more on the Word of God and the preaching and teaching and the leadership of God through your life and through your words to your flock, you will fall under the category of an irresponsible shepherd. And I promise you, God does not deal with us as patiently as he does other people because of what we do. So it's very important that leaders take their responsibilities seriously. And then last but not least, probably the only parable people know from the book of Ezekiel, and don't even know it's in the book of Ezekiel, by the way, is the dry bones, Ezekiel 37, which is the valley full of dry bones in a desert that God reanimates, the Spirit of God comes upon, okay? And this is used to symbolize the spiritual renewal of the nation of Israel. Something else important to mention is Jeremiah and Zechariah were two other prophets who used parables to communicate their messages. And we'll talk about that when we get into them. So parables have always been around, always a very important teaching tool, and probably some of the most prominently known lessons in the Bible today. Now, let's talk about Daniel, right? I don't think we'll have to talk about Daniel too much for the fact that Daniel is quite the famous book of the Bible. And I would hesitate to say, okay, let me back this up. It's a famous book of the Bible, but nobody knows it's famous, okay? And what I mean by that is that there are three very famous stories, Bible stories that you saw on a felt board if you were in Sunday school as a kid, that you sang songs about, that everybody used as an illustration. Pastor may have used it as an illustration at least once a month in some form or fashion, right? And that is, of course, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace, the handwriting on the wall at Belshazzar's feast, and Daniel in the lion's den. Everybody knows this. However, what's so funny is that Daniel is a book that has a lot of mystery. There are recordings of dreams, visions, interpretations that are difficult to understand. And the central message of the book of Daniel is not even these stories. It is about God's power and ultimate triumph being clear, okay? In fact, Daniel's name actually means God is my judge. And so, it is going to be about the fact that God has ultimate power, ultimate authority, and will ultimately win in the end. And, of course, obviously, written by Daniel. Okay, now, there are some contestations to this. One of these is, first of all, we have some differences in language that occur, okay? And second of all, there's some things that they say Daniel could not have possibly known and wrote about this. But the reason that I'm going to say, yes, Daniel did indeed write this is because he claimed to write this book in chapter 12, verse 4, and he used first person from chapter 7 onward. And the Jewish Talmud also agrees that Daniel did indeed write it, and Christ attributed a quote from chapter 9, verse 27 to Daniel the prophet. That happened in Matthew 24, 15. So, despite all of these higher critics of literature, and I'll tell you about what they're talking about as well, I'm going to give you the ability to free think. I'm going to say that if the guy said he did, if it's written in first person, the Jewish Talmud or the religious leaders agree that he did, and Jesus Christ himself said that Daniel wrote it and used a quotation directly from it, that gives me four really big reasons to say, yeah, Daniel did indeed write the book of Daniel. But let's talk about Daniel a little bit, shall we? He's a Jewish youth of noble birth, right? He gets carried off to Babylon in the first captivity under Nebuchadnezzar, same time Ezekiel gets carried off. In 605 B.C., all right? But after Ezekiel gets carried off. In 605 B.C., he became a member of the Babylonian royal service early in his captivity and spent most of his career as an advisor to Nebuchadnezzar. And then not only that, but Nebuchadnezzar's successors kind of started to give Daniel less prominence because, well, he was a Jewish slave. And that happens after Babylon was conquered by the Persians. However, despite all of that, Daniel still achieved considerable importance again under King Darius, however you want to say it. Okay? So what we have here is Ezekiel, Daniel, these guys are both prophets. They're carried off at the same time. Ezekiel goes one way and Daniel goes another. Ezekiel is this priestly prophet. He's amongst the people. He's got all these crazy illustrations. He's what you would think of as the guy in the loinskin cloth kind of prophet. Okay? Whereas Daniel, God places him in a position to help the people politically, as well as Daniel is going to give a lot of very important messianic prophecies and apocalyptic prophecies as well. Ooh, excuse me, I'm drinking my coffee right now too. It's been one of those mornings. So, Daniel, of course, he's a very well-known biblical character. All of these things happen. And he is one of the few that has nothing negative written about him. His life is characterized by faith and prayer, courage, consistency, lack of compromise. He's greatly beloved, as said in chapters 9, 10. And so he was even mentioned, like I said before, in Ezekiel three times by Ezekiel as an example of righteousness. Daniel was a guy that I feel like he is famous for all the wrong reasons. He's famous because he didn't get eaten by lions, but friends, he ought to be famous because he was a strong, faithful man of God. There are very few men in the Bible that have nothing bad written about them. Where I'm talking like count on one hand. There are only like two or three. Even Job, who has some very good things written about him, has his character flaws that we see by the end of the book of Job. Even Samuel, the prophet, priest, and judge, you know, this very strong, faithful guy, his kids were terrible. I mean, you know, there's things that almost every man in the Bible has some chinks in his armor. And Daniel, we don't ever see one. Now, I'm not saying Daniel was without sin. Of course he had sin. But he just lived a life as close as he possibly could to a perfect relationship with God. So, definitely a guy you need to know about, but not because of a lion's den, but because of his extremely godly example to the people and to the world. So, let's kind of get a date pinned down on this. Babylon rebels against the Assyrian Empire, 626 BC, okay? And overthrows the Assyrian capital of Nineveh in 612, and basically becomes the head honcho, the biggest chicken in the yard, after this occurs. They then make their way to Egypt and defeat Egypt at Carchemish in 605. Then later that year, Nebuchadnezzar goes after Jerusalem, takes these prominent citizens as hostage to Babylon, which includes Daniel, okay? So they, within a 20-year time frame, become the biggest rooster in the yard, all right? Daniel ministers for the full duration of the Babylonian captivity as a prophet and government official. Daniel is always there. He's always doing this kind of work. And he even continued it after the Medes and Persians overthrow Babylon in 539, all right? So he's around for quite a bit of time, okay? And he even helped direct some of the Gentile courts of Babylon and Persia with his prophetic ministry. He even helped a lot of his Jewish countrymen. In fact, Zerubbabel led the return of the Jews to Jerusalem in the first year of Cyrus, and Daniel lived and ministered at least until the third year of Cyrus. So he probably played a pretty prominent position in helping Zerubbabel and all these guys go back to Jerusalem. All of these things go on in the ministry of Daniel. And Daniel is going to focus on very extensive visions, okay? And they concern empires such as Babylon and what's going to happen. They even have some discussions that occur that people believe couldn't have occurred without the book being actually written. In the time of the Maccabees in the second century. But what the reason that people have such a problem with the book of Daniel is because Daniel is one of these books you cannot deny what is being talked about, okay? And from a worldly perspective, there's some books of the Bible you could be like, well, I think you're just making it say that. With the book of Daniel, there is no debate. When he talks about the statue of Nebuchadnezzar and the different levels of it, he's describing the theme of empires. You cannot debate what he's talking about. When he talks about the animals, these beasts, that are these empires and how they will eventually work to the new Rome or the, you know, the end times, you just cannot deny who he's talking about. He describes these nations spot on. And so because of that, there's a lot about the book of Daniel gets criticized highly by people who think their brains are big and, you know, as God says, let those who think they are wise become foolish, that kind of thing. And so Daniel, while we have these three very amazing stories, this book is all about the Messiah and the end times and these things that are going on, and there's a lot of very, very thick reading in this book. In fact, Daniel is actually, it's called the Apocalypse of the Old Testament, okay? So it presents, it's basically the revelation of the Old Testament. And so to kind of give you a little bit of a scope of what all is going to happen in this book without just starting this book, we have chapters 1 through chapter 2 is the personal life of Daniel, his background, who he is and what he is. And also, to kind of give you a little information, it is written in Hebrew. Okay? Remember I said that there are some problems with this book because it uses three different languages at some points. Okay? So that's part of what everybody's issue is. But also remember that he is living in what? Gentile exile, which means he would have been what? Exposed to different languages and expected to learn these. So it may have just been a situation of when he started writing the book, he was more used to writing in Hebrew. When he started, writing this chapter, he'd been writing in Chaldean or Aramaic, whichever one it is, depending on where we are. And so that's just how it happens. It's kind of the difference between what you and I do. When I write in print, but if I sign something, I sign in cursive. Does that mean that I didn't write what I wrote? No, it just means I wrote in a different way. And so, chapters 1, chapter 2, personal life of Daniel, written in Hebrew. Chapters 2 to 5, we start writing in Aramaic. Daniel begins interpreting other people's dreams. This is the vision of Nebuchadnezzar. And then 5 to 6 is the vision of Belshazzar. And 6 to 7 is the decree of Darius. And 7 to 8 are the four beasts. All of these are these dreams that Daniel interprets. This is written in Aramaic, and it happens in Babylon or Persia, okay? Meaning, same location, different owner, okay? Chapter 8 to chapter 9, we have the vision of the ram and the male goat, which is the angel interprets Daniel's dreams, okay? So an angel comes and tells Daniel what all these mean. This is in Hebrew. Chapters 9 to 10 is the vision of the 70 weeks, and then 10 to 12 is the vision of Israel's future, okay? So, those are the dreams and the visions of Daniel, and we're going to talk about those a whole lot more later on. But what's so interesting is that one of the most important parts of the prophecies, not that the end of times isn't important, okay? But what's one of the most important parts of what happens in the book of Daniel is that we are introduced to a very important guy. He's the belly and the thighs of bronze. He is like a leopard with four wings and four heads. He's the male goat with one great horn and four horns and a little horn. And that is Alexander the Great. And Alexander the Great, while he's important to secular history because he's this great general, he conquers the known world, blah, 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 blah. He's important to Bible history because God uses him to usher in the Roman Empire, which is going to bring about enough peace that Jesus Christ can come on the scene. Everyone by that time would have spoke Greek, so we have a universal language for the most part. By that time, we have the entire world connected by one empire so that these men could move and preach the gospel freely. Guys, the way God worked this all together is absolutely amazing. And you can see this starting in the book of Daniel hundreds of years before Alexander the Great will even come on the scene. So, book of Ezekiel, book of Daniel. Both happened in Babylonian captivity. Both are prophets. Both are very important men that cover a lot of grand topics that are going to cover a lot of difficult topics. My hope, what I want you to do this week, if you're listening and you actually take my word seriously, go and skim over these books. Go look at like the parables that we mentioned in Ezekiel. Go look at some of the dreams and the visions that Daniel has and kind of discuss those. But also, here you go, something most preachers probably will never tell you. Go study how Alexander the Great came to prominence and took over the known world in a very, very short amount of time. Not because I want you to be like, man, what a great guy is this. He had a whole lot of moral flaws. He was a lost man. Okay, I'm not like putting my stamp of approval on Alexander the Great. What I want you to go see is just how God fit everything that happens in Daniel's dreams with what happens with Alexander the Great, to the point that even the Pharisees and the Sadducees, okay, the high priests of Jerusalem, they hadn't become the Pharisees and the Sadducees just yet, but it was coming, okay? How the priest actually met him when he came to siege Jerusalem and said, "This is about you." That's how clear as day this prophecy was in regards to these empires and kingdoms and their leaders, is that even these priests who are going to mess up the whole Messiah thing a few hundred years from now and kill the guy they're actually waiting on, they knew without a shadow of a doubt that is who this was talking about. So do some digging in those areas. Read some of what happens with Ezekiel and try to wrap your mind around some of his parables and things that are going to happen. But most importantly, as always, get out of here and go study. I'm Pastor Zach Ebarb. This has been Studies Through the Bible. I hope all of you have a great week. God bless.